Let the celebration begin. Come to Cabela's 4th of July sale and gear up for Independence Day. Get 50% off Cabela's American Flag Chairs 2-pack and 50% off a Caravan 10-foot by 10-foot shelter. Plus, get 40% off an Abu Garcia Cardinal Sapphire Spinning Combo and 10% off all in-stock canoes and kayaks. Don't miss Cabela's 4th of July sale in-store and online at Cabela's.com.
Living room conversations enable people to come together through their social networks as friends and their friends to engage in a self-guided conversation on an agreed-upon topic. Typically, the conversations have self-identified co-hosts who hold differing views, and they may or may not be from different ethnic groups, socioeconomic backgrounds, or political parties. You get the idea. Each host invites two of their friends to join the conversation, and participants follow an easy-to-use format that offers structure and a set of questions for getting acquainted with each other and each other's viewpoints. Conversations we find foster new relationships, and they often reveal surprising common ground. The vision for Living Room Conversations is a world in which people who have fundamental differences of opinion and backgrounds work together with respect and even joy to realize the vibrant future we all desire. Living Room Conversations are special because people agree to follow six simple ground rules. It's all stuff we learned in kindergarten, but here's a real quick reminder. Number one, be curious and open to learning. Number two, show respect and suspend judgment. Number three, look for common ground. Number four, be authentic and welcome that from others. Number five, be purposeful and to the point. And number six, own and guide the conversation. So basically, no soapboxing, listen well, and be authentic. And if you look for common ground, people often find it. Enjoy your very own living room conversation. Welcome, everyone, to Coffee Party Radio host Living Room Conversation about guns and responsibility. You know, there's been a lot of talk over the media lately, especially following several mass shootings, about the level of gun violence in our culture and the protection of our Second Amendment rights. So we decided for the Coffee Party Radio team that we would get together and have our own living room conversation about this topic and just see what we could learn from each other. Sit back, enjoy the conversation, and if you want to have this conversation yourself, check out livingroomconversations.org, and it's on the front page, Guns and Responsibility. I'm Debbie Lynn Molyneux. I am president of Coffee Party. I'm also managing partner with Living Room Conversations. Egberto, you're up next.
Well, hello. My name is Egberto Willis. I am here in Kingwood, Texas, and I've always enjoyed listening and watching Living Room Conversations. So I'm very happy that Debbie Lynn brought us on board to have this little talk here on gun controls, and I'm ready to go.
Janine.
Hi, Janine Loudon, Corvallis, Oregon, actually in the foothills of the Oregon Coast Range, giving lots of rain today. So I'm very excited, Debbie Lynn. I don't know if this is the part where we're talking about our expectations or hopes for this call, but I think this is a great group to have this conversation with, so thanks.
Thanks, Janine. Loki.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Loki King. I am actually the producer of a radio show that airs on Coffee Party Radio Network, as well as a co-host with Janine, who you just heard from. So we're going to have a lot of fun with this discussion today.
Thanks, Loki. And Mark?
Yeah, hi, it's Mark Gilbert, and I'm calling in from Lakewood, Colorado, and also a member of the Coffee Party USA, part of their board, as well as a new radio host for them, and also a blogger and author, and I'm excited to be here as well. And so thank you, Debbie Lynn.
Great. Thanks, everybody, for doing the self-introduction. We're going to start with the Living Room Conversation materials now, and what's going to happen is we're going to go through five rounds of questions, and each one will answer one or more of the questions that are offered. I'll go ahead and read them. And these are conversation starters only, and so, you know, when we get to the topic matter at hand, we may go, you know, we'll go off the conversation guide and just have that conversation amongst ourselves. But initially, you know, the first two rounds are about getting to know each other, so we're probably going to move through that really quickly because we already know each other a little bit.
And then we'll get into the meat of the conversation about guns and responsibility, and then we'll do a couple rounds on reflection and learning and next steps. So that's the basic living room conversation. I'll go ahead and get us started. Round one is really like, you know, what interested or drew you to this conversation? That's the question. And I know for myself personally that this conversation is not a black or white issue for me, that I recognize that we have a constitutional right to bear arms. I'm also aware that we have a horrible gun violence problem in our country, and I'm really looking to move the conversation beyond gun control and gun rights to something that might be a workable solution. So that's what drew me to this conversation. Egberto?
What drew me to the conversation, of course, first of all, you brought it up. You gave us the opportunity to come on board. You asked. But most importantly, I think if we can have these types of conversations that actually get out there on the Internet, and not only get out there on the Internet, but that we promote, we can have an alternative to what we hear on the mainstream media, which are a whole lot of shallow sound bites that make things, as you mentioned earlier, Develin, black or white, as opposed to gradations of gray, if you will. And I think if you have folks like us out there trying to show that as much as we may differ in much of what the solution is, the fact that we are working in sort of a civil manner to come up with a solution makes it more possible that none of us get what we want, but that somehow we get something that is better than the current today, which today is pretty darn bad.
Okay, Gerto, Janine? So I guess if the question is, you know, what drew me to this conversation other than this gracious invitation, I swim in a sea of gray, right? And so I'm not a Democrat. I'm not Republican. I do not look for middle ground. I look for solid ground. And so I've become sort of a researcher of the reality of our times. And so over the years, I've developed this appreciation for the idea that liberty and justice for all, liberty being the rights of the individual, you know, and justice being the rights of the members of a society, are two almost opposing concepts, and they occur as a dance in a ballroom that we call the Constitution, in a reality we call this Republic's democracy. So when it feels like something has gone sideways, and I feel like this whole public violence issue it has gone sideways, then I look to that ballroom, I look to that dance, I look to what is fundamentally true here, and then I look for answers and solutions. So unfortunately, as Egberto just alluded to, what we hear, it's kind of like icing on the cake of something. I don't know. It's a superficial conversation that's more about shaming and less about problem solving. So I'm excited that maybe here we can lay some groundwork or even make some steps in actual problem solving. How do we honor, you know, liberty and justice? Thanks, Janine. Loki.
The reason that, you know, I am actually here is I actually grew up in a small little town where my grandfather actually taught me how to use a firearm as a tool. And that's what a lot of people are forgetting, is firearms or guns are tools to be used appropriately. And the mass media out there in a lot of our legislatures are trying to use situations that to take guns away, to infringe on our inalienable rights, where the issue or problem, in my personal opinion, isn't necessarily the gun itself. It's that we have other issues that we actually need to take a look at and find solutions for, so that we can move forward and still keep our rights instead of having them always taken away.
Thanks, Loki. And Mark?
Yeah, the reason I said yes to your request, Debbie Lynn, was this is an issue that keeps coming up for me that is one that I think that our country and our world really needs to take some action on, and I have felt a personal degree of frustration over our inability to overcome our polarization and in some degrees trivialization of some of the issues to get it really at some of what really are the root issues of the violence in America. For the last 6 years, and this will sound like a shameless plug, I have written a website called Conscious Bridge that I meld spirituality, politics, and cultural issues in. And one of the most frequent topics I've written about is violence in America. In fact, about 3 years ago, I did a five-part series on that. One of the blogs at that time was called roughly, guns are not the problem, they're a symptom, so words to that effect. And what I really feel like and why I think the conversations such as this are important is that they really are allowing us to move beyond some of the surface issues that we get at regarding a violence in America, which I think guns can become one of that. And we get stuck, we get mired in some of these issues. And so this past week, the events in San Bernardino actually called me to write another blog I did over the weekend, which was posted, regarding the this topic again, and getting at us looking at really the root issue. In that blog, I listed a lot of different reasons that we tend to hold up as the reasons for violence in America, and and there's different people that have perspectives that could say it's we need to have greater gun control, to the other end of the spectrum of people saying we need greater guns and security. And there's probably some degree of truth in all of these points of view, but I think that they don't really get at the key issues. So that's why I was drawn to this conversation. So hopefully we can spend some time moving beyond guns and looking at, why do we live in such a violent world?
Thanks, Mark. That's going to take us into round two, which are our hopes and concerns for the future. There's three questions here. You can answer any one of the following or all of them or two of them. It's up to you. And the three questions are, what sense of purpose, mission, or duty guides you in your life? What would your best friend say about you, about who you are, and what makes you tick? And what most concerns you about your community and or the country right now and long term? And I'll go ahead and we'll do the same order. I'll start off this round. I really have a sense of our country kind of being pulled in opposite directions, having, two different narratives. Like we're living in parallel universes right now. And I actually think that as uncomfortable as that is, it is actually part of our process of rewriting our social contract with one another. I think our old social contract, which ended which started at probably the end of World War II, early 1950s, kind of set up like, here's how we are going to be as a country now. It was a new world at the end of World War II, and America kind of came into preeminence. And through in the following decades, things have started to break down, and that social contract that had white supremacy, and white privilege isn't working so well anymore. And we need to figure out what our new social contract is going to be and how we want to treat each other and who we want to be as a country. So that's kind of the mission or duty that guides me in my life. And I think one of the things that most concerns me right now is kind of these parallel narratives that we have going on both have a sense of apocalyptic proportions or Armageddon. Whether it's climate change on the left or the second coming of Christ or bringing on they think is coming. There's this sense that there are great changes, and I'm just hopeful that we choose peaceful means to decide this and rather than having another major world war. That's my biggest concern. And I'll leave you with that to follow that, Egberto.
The first thing I want to say is that what most of my friends, I think, would say about me is they either think I'm crazy, idealistic, or overly optimistic, and I cop to them all. Now, I think that one of the overreaching things that I always believe in concentrating on is the middle class. And the only reason I bring the middle class is that is an all-encompassing group of folk, and I think if if things are working right, the middle class is doing fine. It would mean the middle class is doing fine, and that the edges, meaning the poor and the rich, there would be so few of them that in effect we pretty much get to that status quo position. Now, my biggest fear, or one of the things that I try to point out, is because as far as I'm concerned, I'm clairvoyant in what I'm seeing. From experience, I watch what our politics is doing to us. Really, is sort of dividing and conquer, attempting to divide and conquer, because those that are in control are such a small group that against the masses, it's impossible for them to continue to reign. And as such, we have structures that are designed to keep us at each other's throats. We have structures designed to keep us misinformed or ill-informed. Henceforth, the Powell Manifesto and many of these other documents that try to materially keep us unintelligent, if you will. My goal, one of the things that I hope to do in the different avenues that I participate, is one person at a time, try to talk to them, try to get them to see things through clear eyes, clear glasses, clear whatever, in such a manner that external forces has little effect on them, and they simply start doing things that they can see are in the interest of themselves, their city, their state, their country, and the world. I want to kind of piggyback on something as far as the something that one mentioned about, I think that you mentioned about, let's say, the environment on the left and something on the right. One of the issues that I stress and I try to get across is that we must not, for the survival not only of the middle class but of the world, allow there to be to consider things like left and right as polar opposites. In other words, we cannot cower into believing that these are equivalences. As far as, okay, well, your topic is global warming, my topic is guns. The reality is those are false equivalences that we have to try to understand. One has global effects on the things, if one is to believe it, if one is to prove it. The other, not necessarily so. One is under full control of humanity immediately. One takes time. So there are all these things that I'd like to, one of the things that I want to do is get it out there to not allow fomenting these type of false equivalences that prevent us from actually doing something.
Thanks, Egberto. Janine. Gosh, I'm at a loss at which one of these questions to answer, and I resonate with a lot of what's already been said. So I was trying to look at what maybe I bring that's unique here, and I guess part of it is dovetailing on what Egberto just said. There's one of my go to bed at night novels. I read Harry Bosch, right, and Conley, and he's got this motto that everyone counts or nobody counts, and as we see the social contract being rewritten, Debbie Lynn, it feels like it's being rewritten to I count and I'm the only one who counts. And I'm very uncomfortable with that. I'm very interested in human dignity. And as a matter of fact, the motto of my company, I'm a retired business owner, has 40 employees in 3 Western states, and our motto was service with dignity. I just feel like the nature of the conversation today, whether it's the one we're addressing today or many, many more, is powerful in its ability to remove human dignity. And when human dignity is removed, then all kinds of crazy things happen, right? Or it's almost like oxygen. It's almost like taking the oxygen out of the room to remove the dignity from someone's life. And so I guess I'm sort of struggling with trying to encapsulate how can we invoke that magical thing that we call American ingenuity unless we can all play a part. You know, when failure is not an option, then all perspectives matter. in all perspectives come to the table, and they have this creative tension from which is born something unthought of, something unheard of, some ability we've never exercised before. And it's this feeling of our dignity, this polarization, pulls us apart as though polarization itself is the antidote to American ingenuity. So flip that around, restore our dignity. We can restore that American ingenuity. We can have a basis from which we address this and all those other challenges that face modern civilization. So maybe that's the piece I bring. Thanks. All right, Loki.
You know, the purpose and the sense of what guides me in my life, my grandfather did a lot of the raising of me, and the one thing that he always taught me was that we are everybody's teacher, but we are also everybody's student. So always try to learn something new each and every day. Our founding fathers set this country up in very specific and clear terms as to how it was supposed to be seen, viewed, and acted upon. And throughout time, our society has become so self-serving, and it's all about me, 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 and we're being distracted and pulled apart and barriers put into place that we are no longer respecting one another or even know our next-door neighbor, because if they don't have something to offer me, they aren't worth it. And you know, our country right now is so upside down, and they're using means and hate and fear to push an agenda to where we can't even think for ourselves anymore, which is very, very sad. And we need to get back to the point of realizing that we are the ones that actually control the destiny of this country, and not just select few people that are in, you know, Washington, D.C. It's us, the people, and we are the ones allowing our country to backslide because we're not stepping up and saying, no, that is incorrect, or that we need to start retaining and teaching again what the Constitution is all about, what our rights are, our freedoms, and everything else is all about, and not just always use the hate-mongering, the fear-mongering, and everything else to try to make a point. When I put something out on the air, I expect that people are going to listen to what I have to say, but I also expect them and almost require them to ask a lot of questions. Always be willing to ask a lot of questions. Don't be afraid to take a step and actually want to learn.
Thanks, Loki. And Mark?
Yeah, I think what's probably unique for me and brings me into this conversation and gets to my purpose and mission is that I've been a longtime spiritual seeker. I moved very much through the secular world and development there, but always in the background was this aspect of spiritual growth, and it's led to the development a few years back of a realization of a worldview that I don't expect others to have to buy into or believe it, but the worldview that I can quickly describe guides my actions, and it's basically a realization, A, that we're all connected, and B, that through the power of our consciousness, we have the ability to create and control and direct our lives, and that C, we're on an evolutionary journey, and that the evolutionary journey is moving us through sort of an animalistic past into a future that I call a spiritual future, but one where we're more aware and are evolving in our consciousness. And I say that as a backdrop because my purpose fits in that vision that individually we're on this evolutionary journey, and collectively we are, and that we're all these little pockets of consciousness contributing to the one larger pocket of consciousness. And so everywhere out there in our country are all these people with their individual beliefs and freedom to believe what they want, but they're all evolving at their own ways and their own paces and so forth. And so my role and what guides me is to see that the special gift that I believe that I was given in this lifetime and my purpose is to understand the complexities of life and try to reframe them in a way that makes them accessible to people. And so most of what I work on and do is driven towards trying to bring what I see as an understanding of this mysterious life we're a part of and moving us to higher degrees of understanding of our interconnectedness in this evolutionary journey we're on. And I can go on and on about that topic, but I won't. But I'll simply say that in that is this desire to be a spokesperson, a person who through my actions models a higher calling for us, moves us to a recognition that we can have higher degrees of care and concern for one another. And the whole aspect of looking out at people who have been, for a number of reasons, and this gets into the other point regarding my concerns me about the country right now, is that for a lot of people, they're so locked on materialistic growth and success. They're so locked into that level of their awareness that they are using their power of money and control to paint a picture of fear in the planet. And so that many of the people in our country are locked into a fearful attitude where they are buying guns because they're afraid of other people and they don't want immigrants in the country and they're afraid of other religions. And there is this push in our media to divide us. And I think that things like the coffee party and conversations like this and all of the work that I try to do is one of saying, okay, that's one choice is to move to fear. But there's another choice here, and that's to move to a different perspective and seeing the interconnectedness of everything and how we can expand care and concern for one another. And when we do that, it changes and shifts us. It doesn't necessarily mean that we don't necessarily want to buy a gun or not, but it reframes the reasons for having one and moves us out of fear and hopefully moves us to a positive direction. So that's what guides me, and what my concerns are is that too many people are living in fear right now, and somehow or another we need to reorient the people who each of us is those little pockets of consciousness to move to being more in care and concern for a greater number of people.
Thank you, Mark. Well, we've touched on round three several times already, but this is, you know, the meat of the conversation, if you will. And just a quick reminder, we've been really good about following the conversation guidelines, but just also to remember that the goal for this living room conversation is for us to listen and learn where we have different opinions and where we have shared interests, intentions, and goals. So with that in mind, our starter questions here, and you can answer one or more, or your own if you have another one, is where did you learn about guns and what did you learn? What role have guns played in your life? What are your concerns about gun safety? And are gun issues on your top 10 list of concerns? Why or why not? I don't know that I ever really learned about guns. My earliest memory of firearms is being over at my grandmother's house, and my grandfather's rifle lived above a doorway and it was, you know, upside down between two cabinets. It was in the kitchen. And it was, you know, understood that kids are not going to touch it, and it was just there all the time. And I never saw him shoot the gun. I think my cousin has it now. That was really it. That was all I knew was, you know, don't touch it. Fast forward to, I don't know, somewhere in my mid-30s, I took a leadership course in the community where I was living at the time. And this is one of those 9-month programs where they take you through a different aspect of the community every month. And so you spend a whole day learning about agriculture and education and stuff. And so on law enforcement day, one of the things that they did was they put us in with a training video and a training gun in our hands and said, you know, so without any background training for us, of course, they said, you have to decide if to shoot the gun, if this is a dangerous situation, and when to shoot the gun. So this is, you know, almost the first time I've ever held a gun or a gun simulator. the situation, the video starts playing and my heart rate starts going up because I've got six gang members walking out of the house as I pull in a supposed squad car, you know, and I'm watching the movie and I've got the gun in my hand. No matter how many times I told them to stop and back up, of course, in the video they continue coming because they can't respond other than what they filmed. I ended up, you know, getting, you know, my heart rate to such a rate where I was so afraid I shot four of them. That taught me something about myself, which was that I have a very strong survival skill, and I will shoot to kill. And that scared me because, you know, what if it's, you know, the neighbor's kid coming in the wrong house in the middle of the night or something stupid like that. And I just realized that I really didn't want to have a gun around because I was afraid of using it and hurting somebody by accident. And I think that's that was the big lesson that I had from my law enforcement day. I do have concerns about gun safety and assault rifles because we don't seem to have community standards about what's okay and not okay and where is it okay and not okay. And you know, when I see somebody with a rifle on their back, when I was in Paris in 1999 and all of the they were gendarmes, they were the French police, stood around embassies and stuff with AK-47s, I was kind of scared. I didn't like it. I'm not comfortable around guns. But on that being said, it's also not on my top 10 list because I think we have so many other issues that play into the gun issue that we would be better served talking about and working on those issues, and I think gun violence would go down. So that's my conversation starter, and Egberto, I leave it to you.
I will be frank. I know very little about guns, the different types of guns, all that sort of stuff. Everything that I know is sort of empirical, what I see on air, et cetera. Now, I am not particularly against guns for people owning guns for their protection, for their safety. I am concerned about guns in my space. I want no guns in my space. Because as an engineer, I only look at numbers, and I know that guns, for all the violence that we see on TV, the people that get hurt the most by guns are those who own it, or the relatives of those who own it, or the families, etc. So as such, I don't have one. I don't want to deny one to anybody. I do want to protect those who choose not to have it. When it comes to it being whether gun regulations are a part of my top 10, to some extent, yes. And the reason it is because of what I have noticed occurring in the country over the last several years, specifically, and this is behind the scenes, it never makes it on TV, where we have a culture that we rarely speak about that is actually arming themselves at this time for war and insurgency in this country. And I think it is something that it's an undercurrent that one needs to take seriously. The closest we came to bring that to the forefront was when the Department of Justice or the FBI, I don't remember which one, came out and said that one of our biggest concerns right now was domestic terrorism and not external terrorism. It is something that concerns me dearly. And I think there are a lot of triggers, including with what is occurring today with some of our presidential candidates, that could actually get people riled up enough to create, with the abundance of these weapons, sort of a political dissension that make us start doing things that a democracy wouldn't otherwise do. So I think in the long run, guns, in my opinion, it has to be on my top 10 list and very close to the top. But it's not only guns, it's a lot of other things, as Devlin says, that I think we need to tackle as a country from a perspective of income inequality and otherwise, but guns is also a part of the equation in my humble opinion.
Thanks, Egberto. And Janine.
I think it's really interesting to ask the question. No one's ever actually asked me, where did you learn about guns? You know, what is your, it's kind of like the deep background that informs who I am today. And so I really had to actually look at that. And so I grew up in a rural community, a farming community in Oregon. And everyone had guns. They were mostly for hunting, somewhat for safety. I've shot a shotgun. I've shot a handgun. They were just a part of the fabric of my upbringing. And there was no conversation, are there, you know, should we or should we not have guns? There was, however, a predominant conversation about gun safety, because in the best of worlds, guns are dangerous. You know, they are a dangerous tool, just like there are certain things you did with a combine and there are certain things you do with an automobile and there's certain ways you handled all kinds of machinery. There are big rules about how you handled that machine. And so one of the things I learned growing up was, besides all the basic gun safety stuff, you know, how do you handle them, but it was also that there are some people that probably shouldn't have them. They were cavalier in how they had them in their homes. They were cavalier about how they had them in their truck. They flaunted their weapons, and basically, the if you want to call it the drumbeats were that, hey, these are scary people, and, you know, stay away from them. There were homes I was not allowed to go to because of the way they handled weapons in their home. Not that they had them, but how they handled them. And then as you get older, you start learning more about, okay, beyond hunting, you know, why does one have a weapon? Why did I learn to shoot a handgun? Well, it was because, especially as a young woman, in theory, I needed to be able to defend myself. But I learned pretty quickly and was told pretty quickly by the instructor, if you're not willing to shoot me, don't have this, because all you do is arm your assailant. So there's that whole other consciousness about, is that the better way to defend myself? Could I really shoot someone and kill them? I'm kind of with Debbie Lynn. I believe I could called to a camp. I can do almost anything, but, you know, I don't want to test that theory. Also, because guns were a part of the fabric of life, we all knew kids who were killed by other kids by mishandling their parents' weapons, for example. We all knew people who were involved in hunting accidents, some of them fatal, some of them not. There was a murder-suicide six doors down on my little road, you know. So we saw weapons used probably every way they could be used, and never once did we raise the question, should we have them? The question was always, should they have them? What should we do about people who don't keep their weapons away from children? What do we do about people who use them aggressively, you know, not in self-defense? You know, so this is a child's conversation. This is a 10-year-old conversation about it. And frankly, I personally know 5 people were killed by guns in non-combat situations. I'm also a child of many wars, so I don't count this. When this question was asked, I went, wow, where does what I think come from? And so when you dovetail this, you know, just the sort of working knowledge that guns are here and people use them and people abuse them and, you know, that's how it is. Then you come into modern times. You have an interesting confluence of this escalating angry society with an escalating need for armament. And I remember when assault rifle ban was lifted. I remember thinking, oh, good. You know, it was kind of like, you know, handguns and shotguns and rifles weren't enough. Now we're going to have these things. But this issue has creeped up on me over time. But I still stand with this notion or this question. It is, I don't think everybody's guns should be taken away. First of all, it's not constitutional. And second of all, if you agree with what Mark said, and I do, this gun violence is a symptom. However, the fact that we still have a problem, this particular symptom is way out of control. And I promise you, the people who tell me everyone should own a gun, sorry, I'm with the Gerto on that one. I really don't want weapons in my home. My son came home from his second tour in Iraq with severe PTSD. I found him sleeping with a loaded weapon under his pillow. I mean, it's like there are times when people should be around weapons. There are times when they should not. And so you see, this is convoluted. This is not, there's no absolutism here. But we do have a social responsibility to manage the outliers in any rights that we have under the Constitution. The Constitution says, doesn't say you can't regulate these things. It says, hey, here's a given. We have the ability. You know, I'll stop there, but thank you for asking me where my fundamental worldview about weapons.
Most welcome, Janine. And Loki.
Like Janine, I actually grew up in a small rural farming community where it was necessary at times to own guns because we lived out in the country, and calling 911, they were 30, 40 minutes away. Having a gun presence was helpful. It was a tool to go hunting. I actually was taught, like I said earlier, by my grandfather what the purpose of a gun was for. The purpose of a gun is to have a means to feed your family. A purpose of a gun is to be able to protect yourself and your family from harm. Or as the Constitution, both federal and in many states, say, a gun is to be used in case of a tyrannical government to be able to protect yourself from that. Growing up, we had guns in our rigs at all times. Even when I was going to high school, three quarters of the students there, we all had pickups, we all had gun racks in our trucks, and we all had 30-06s in the truck. But when we had a problem, we did not go to the gun to resolve the problem. We resolved the problem either through drag out, let's get muddy, fist fight, conversation, whatever it was to be. The gun was not to be used in that situation. I also have an uncle who is a law enforcement officer. Both of them have always taught me, have the gun, carry the gun with you, because for most people, just the sight of the gun is going to be enough of a deterrent for them to leave you alone. They also always taught me, if you're going to unholster the weapon, you better be willing to use it. Otherwise, if you're not going to unholster it and use it, don't even own it. And the example that you gave, Debbie Lynn, you know, the law enforcement situation where you were watching the video and having to make a decision based on a video that does not change or does not stop for decision-making purposes. Unfortunately, I personally feel that you were put in an unrealistic situation because you never know what's going to happen. And like, you know, Janine said, the sight of a gun scares me, so I'm not going to approach that situation. It's gotten out of control in a lot of aspects from when we grew up being taught the fundamentals of life and how we deal with things and how to solve our problems, to where our society today and the younger generations aren't being taught problem-solving skills, where violence is actually being promoted or seen as a Hollywood thing of this is how things are done. And that is an unrealistic point of view. Guns in the right hands of the right people are a good thing. Do everybody or should everybody out there have a gun? Probably not, because if they cannot be responsible and knowing that a gun is a tool to be used for specific situations and things, they probably shouldn't own it. There are people out there that have mental diseases that probably shouldn't own it. But how do we get around to that point of saying who should and who shouldn't be able to own a gun. It all comes down to the simple fact of being safe and being responsible. You know, my uncle, who still is a canine officer, he says the people that he's talked with that he's actually arrested for burglaries or whatever else, they have actually told him, if I would have known that there was even a gun in the house, I would have never even went to that house, because I'm not going to put my life on the line or in the line of fire where I could be harmed. It's a double-edged sword. Will we ever have a clear line of what it should be? I don't know.
Thanks, Loki. And last but not least, Mark.
Yeah, you know, there were not guns in my house when I was growing up. We lived in an urban setting, but I had a lot of relatives with farms and such, and so I was around guns to the degree I would go visit them. And as I was growing up, I had buddies of mine, friends who always owned guns. I went hunting with friends and was taught, you know, gun safety by my friends who owned guns. I also learned from that a couple of things. One, I learned that I was not a hunter. I learned that, you know, I guess if I was had to do it to feed myself, I could. But the act of taking an animal's life through the use of a gun was so disturbing to me that it turned me off of using guns early on in my life. But I used to enjoy going out and shooting guns, like shooting cans and bottles and things like that, and did that a number of times. And I understand the joy and the feeling that comes with, you know, pulling the trigger on a gun and accomplishing what your target, hitting your target. So I get that. And throughout my life, I've had good friends who own guns. Very similar to others here, when I was raising my children, I did not want guns in the house. And throughout my life, I have never owned a gun and never see myself owning a gun. And that's, you know, personal choice. But it's interesting to me that I see so much in the debate out there on guns that are always concerned that the people who want gun control are out to get and take away people's guns. And it's interesting. I've not heard anybody here voice that opinion. And in my own life, I don't think I've but rarely run into anybody who's ever taken that position. Yet that seems to be this, we have to move through this sort of distraction argument about anything that's a conversation on limiting guns in this country has to get beyond this fear factor of people who think that any talk of gun control means that your guns are going to be taken away. Yet when you get down to it, that's just a bogus argument in my mind. What are my concerns about gun safety? I'm sort of drifting into that. There was a data the other day about the number of guns in our country, and there were a number of guns currently available, according to the data I was reading, there for every man, woman, and child in this, you know, country to have a gun or more. And but of course, then it went on to say that there were tens of millions of people who didn't own guns. And so if you quickly think about that, there's this concern, and I think Egberto was getting at this, that there's these people who are arming themselves to the teeth with guns, and the question is why? Why is it in our culture that people are feeling like they have to own assault rifles and guns that can kill people at such a fast pace? And so why can't we put some restrictions, you know, on those kinds of guns? Why is it that a reasonable discussion around limiting guns that are in the hands of wrong people, as Janine said, or guns that could kill at such an extreme rate, why can't we have a reasonable conversation that says, let's put some reasonable restraint on these things? And I think it gets back to this aspect of there's a large voice within the country who is pushing us down the path of fear and separation, and people are so fearful that they feel like the one reaction is that they're like a cornered animal, and they've got to protect themselves, and they have to have guns and guns that can kill at a fairly high rate, or prepare themselves for the coming apocalypse that they think is going to occur. And so, are guns on my top 10 list of concerns? Not guns per se, but the whole. I would say one of my top fears is this idea of fear that it manifests itself in so many ways. It manifests itself in the gun issue. It manifests itself in the immigration issue. and some religion issues, that where people are fearful of the other. And I think that's my biggest concern is why is it that we have so many people who are hunkering down into a sense of fear and separation from one another? And I think a lot of it is the media painting us into that because they want to keep us fearful in some regards, that there are financial interests at stake in wanting to maintain a culture of fear. And I think that there's beyond, you know, the that aspect of it is just the whole idea that people who are, you know, the media and the entertainment industry and everything sees guns as a solution to some sort of problem, whereas it's really, I believe, people's income inequality and many people not being able to meet their basic needs. I think if there was an up-leveling of some of the basic things of education, a social safety network, and people had the opportunity to have meaningful jobs that gave them a base income, that would alleviate some of the fear that they had and alleviate some of the needs for guns. So guns aren't in the top list, but guns are sort of a symptom floating around there of people buying guns because of their fearfulness over the direction and separation that we've got in life. That's for me, Deadingly.
Thanks, Mark. I want to open it now up for just kind of free conversation. Did anybody have questions for any of the other panelists today, other participants? And just speak freely. All right. Well, I actually had a little bit of a question, Mark. I'm resonating with what you're saying about guns kind of being a symptom of our disconnection or separateness. After the mass shooting happened last week in San Bernardino, I actually posted something that kind of asked the question that I think is related to this, and that is, like, what is it about our society that people think extremism of, you know, is the answer? You know, that there's some violent reaction, it becomes their solution or their way of acting out in because of our culture, our society. And I don't have an answer to that, but I'd love to explore that a little bit.
In order, did you want me to respond first?
Sure, go right ahead. No, we're not doing an order right now. Just speak freely.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I have thought about that, and there are so many factors, I think, that contribute to a culture of fear. And this is one of the things I wrote on my blog the other day, that I really do feel like, to a degree, we when we're in fear, we go back into our you know, animalistic past, for lack of a better, you know, we go back into that reptilian brain that says it's fight or flight, that you know, and we get like cornered animals. And you know, and we can all see an animal who gets cornered and will strike out and to defend itself, or strikes out first to not be the cornered animal. And if we take the fact that that's a little bit in each and every one of us from this past of just being a human being on this planet, that we, in those moments when we feel cornered and fearful, we want something to strike out with, and we want to give ourselves the advantage. And guns are a tool that help us address that fear, or help us feel in our minds that we're evening out the differences when I'm feeling like you have the greater power over me. So we have so many people in our country for so many reasons are feeling disempowered. And I think the one that Egberto hit on income inequality is the one that I perceive as one of the biggest issues in this country, is that we have so many people who are fearful and fear and feel like they're backed into a corner. Yet we also do this with religion. I think that sometimes the voices in our country that want to blame in broad strokes the Muslim faith for all of the terrorist acts, you know, is doing a disservice, because then what happens is that people who are could be perhaps moderate on an issue feel like they're getting backed into a corner, and a belief that system that is so essential to who they are feels like the only way they can, you know, come back and strike out is in these slight types of attacks. I don't justify any of these attacks. I think they're all wrong, but from a standpoint, if you look at it as a person who's feeling fearful and feeling backed into a corner and feeling disempowered and they've got nowhere to turn, these kinds of people, and they can be people who are mentally ill, they can be people who are disempowered through income, through feeling like they're separated from their faith or religion, or just not being heard. I mean, bullies, you know, some of the many times are people who are getting picked on at school, and the whole bullying situation in schools paints a you know, person into a corner, and guns are their way of trying to even it up and strike out. And I think they just get so overly frustrated that it's a striking out against everyone to try to alleviate the high degree of frustration they've probably felt in a long time. That's my dime store psychological analysis, as my wife would say. I'd be interested what others think on the topic.
Just to piggyback on what you're saying there, yes, we are in a society where a lot of fear is being glorified, violence is being glorified. We're in a situation where we're struggling to be able to survive economically, to be able to put food on our tables for our family, you know, low-paying jobs, whatever else it is. There's powers out there that are wanting to try to put their thumb on us and keep us down. And that causes, when you have somebody that has a free will as a human being, has choices, has thoughts, and when you're trying to hold them back from what they're trying to do, yes, you're going to put them in a fight or flight mode. And like has been said, gun can be a system. And I personally feel that a lot of the situations of these mass shootings and everything else, a lot of them are because people are searching for help. They want help. They know, they recognize they need help. I know, for example, the UCC shooting we had here in Oregon, it was reported several times and even by the military that the shooter was actually drummed out because he had mental issues and he was trying to find the help that he needed, but he was being roadblocked or told, no, we can't help you because you don't have the means to pay our $100 bill an hour that we require for us to be able to see you. Yet we folk or the media attention and the government and everybody else wants to focus on gun controls. But the same day that our president, Mr. Obama, was actually down in Roseburg visiting with some of the victims' families down there, we had a mass tragedy attack that happened in Pennsylvania that happened over a knife situation. But there is no upcry from the government about that or from even society in general. It's like, oh, that happened, no big deal. It wasn't a gun, so don't worry about it. Why are we focusing on one single item that is a tool that can do nothing on its own without the help of a human being when there are other issues that need to be resolved, like being able to have a livable, comfortable life and not always having to work 34 hours in a 24-hour day just to be able to pay your bills, put food on your table, and take care of your family? How many of us can actually go out there and say, and I'm guilty of it myself, I live in a place now that I have at least 12 to 14 houses on the block that I live on. I don't know 3/4 of those people. I know one or two. Why do we no longer go out and find out our neighbor, find out how they can help us, how we can help them? Why aren't we willing to go when we see an elderly man blowing the leaves off of his lawn, going to help him? There is a whole bunch of stuff, and I personally think it's lack of communication, it's lack of problem solving, and it's we've gotten away from the respect, and it's all about me, me, me. I don't need to go help somebody else. They need to help me.
I want to chime in a bit.
Janine was following our normal call protocol. Did you have something to chime in to, Janine?
Well, I do, but go ahead, Egbert, and then I'll speak after you.
I want to remind everybody that right now, with the issue with the two gun incidents that we've had thus far, in the scope of the size of America, they were really, and this is not to really, I don't want to sound immoral when I say this, but in the size of America itself, it was very inconsequential. In the size of the amount of people that are murdered by guns or otherwise every day, it was really inconsequential. What made it consequential is our entire journalism field are now focused on that one issue. We have an election that is occurring right now. There are a lot of issues, as Develin and others have mentioned, that are of utmost importance. Our deteriorating infrastructure that is actually as well will cost quite a few lives, with the bridges that fall, with the potholes that cause accidents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not being talked about. The income inequality issue, people are so fearful of how the media is portraying these two events that this is occurring. This is all by design. Keep us scared. Keep us scared of the neighbors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason that has to be done is because the small amount of folk on the top that the puppeteers, I like to say, it is important for us to be in a constant state of chaos, because then we cannot keep our eyes on the ball. One of the things that Coffee Party does is it attempts to bring these stories and independent information out there with the expectation that we will get across the clutter for only what's happening in the immediacy, if you will. Because right now, this is just a matter of control. I want to refer to another comment one of the guests in here mentioned with regards to guns versus knives. He's correct, first of all, that, wow, how comes we didn't take note of that violence that maybe occurred as well over there? I want to caution, however, that when we have other tools like knives or whatever, they cannot be by design as destructive of the kinds of guns that we allow anybody to have. So while it is true that we haven't allowed or those incidents should be covered as well and figure out, as per Mark, the psychology of why these things are occurring, it is also important to note that the reality is that somebody with a knife creates, or rather somebody with these types of assault weapons create orders of magnitude in deaths and damage relative to what one person can do with a knife, a machete, or any one of those things. Thanks.
So my contribution here was, this is a great conversation, so now I feel like I'm going in several directions, but I guess I was pointing to originally that we agree that we live in a society that is too accepting of violence. And Loki, your point about the knife is a good indicator. Egberto's point about all the violence being sort of like some invisible background in which the media looks at the spectacular events of violence. All of this points to Mark's notion that this is a symptom, he says, of fear, and Egberto says of disempowerment, and I say of having been robbed of our dignity, and I think all those terms are, you can commingle those terms. It's, you know, as a woman, I'm very clear that women are killed by their domestic partners every day. Children are killed by guns all the time. All kinds of acts of violence. I was on a jury one time where a car was used as a weapon. I think that sometimes the place where we're able to get off the point, as Egberto's pointing to, get off the point and hang up somewhere, the tool or the trick is the relationship between the Constitution and this particular kind of weapon. Although bearing arms could mean bearing knives, and it could mean bearing pipe bombs, and it could mean bearing, you know, using cars as weapons, but the common interpretation of the Constitution is guns, right? Could be a bow and arrow, you know, but the common conversation is guns. So we somehow tie this into the constitutionality of this particular use of deadly force, which I think, as Egberto pointed out, is a trick. Because first of all, I mean, I carry the Constitution. I am never without it. It is in my purse. It is in my backpack. It is wherever I go. So I am a student of this document and the letters that led to it and all of that. But I have to say that there is a point. There's an outer marker of acceptability. I honestly don't think the framers of the Constitution thought there was no limit to the collateral damage allowed to that right. I don't think they thought that. I don't know why we think that. I don't think we do. But it is the tool that gets used. We start confusing a fundamental American right with a societal tendency to act out in acts of absolutism. I'm curious if anyone else sort of sees, I mean, where is the outer marker of acceptable collateral damage for the Second Amendment? Where is the outer marker for acceptable collateral damage to our freedom to, hell, carry a baseball bat? This is the frustrating point to me. I don't want to argue the Constitution. I want to talk about American civil society and human dignity. Thanks.
This is Mark. I'll jump in here for a second and just say that I think the whole constitutional argument is another one of those distractions that we go down into the path of. Yes, there's all the historical reasons and the Supreme Court rulings that came up regarding the right to bear arms and what that means, et cetera. But I agree with you 100%, Janine, that simply we can have a reasonable conversation and reasonable restraint upon our guns, and it doesn't impact that amendment in any way. But I think what happens is that there's a wide spectrum of people and beliefs about it, and some people, in their fear, they withdraw down into a very tight and very fundamentalist kind of interpretation of that, thinking it means no restrictions on guns at all. And I do not think anybody, most of the population doesn't interpret it that way. But we get locked up into this, what does the Second Amendment mean, discussion, and then we spend so much time and energy on that, we get worn down, and then we never do anything. And I think that's, you know, it's again, to me, another distraction that keeps us from actually solving the issue.
Mark, I couldn't agree with you more about, you know, about it being, I mean, in effect, I think, Mark, you're also saying, yes, a lot of time the Constitution is used as a weapon to not get things done or to get your way by using that constitutional hammer, if you will. I always look at folks and I tell folks something very special about the Constitution. For all of those who look at the Constitution as this immaculate document through their eyes, for somebody like myself, that document doesn't resonate as it resonates with many, let's say with many Tea Partiers or with many more Republican than Republicans in you know what I mean. Libertarians, exactly. I don't have that cozy feeling to the Constitution because until recently, the Constitution was a very flawed document for many of us. So I think when you have some of us look at it in that light, it doesn't become this document that is also infallible. I look at the document as something to keep structure and something to keep order and something that we look up to for order. And when it stops working, and I think it has stopped working in a lot of areas, we change it through a process. That's what groups like other groups that I'm involved with, let's say Move to Amend, is attempting to do. I have never been the person to look at the Constitution of that ever good thing from a whole bunch of good men. I think the founders were good people trying to do good things with their own interests. As we migrate into a different country, as we migrate into a more moral country, because there was a whole lot of morality missing then, in my humble opinion, I think we continuously got better. And I think as a country, that is exactly what's been happening, and I think it's going to occur with guns, I think it's going to occur with all these things. If we don't allow those who want to prevent these things from happening by keeping us in a state of full chaos.
You want to jump in here, Loki?
Just to go with what was just said, you know, I personally have to disagree with that. I don't think, and there is no way that the Founding Fathers would have known the advances that we've made in technology, but I don't think it's a flawed document per se. It is the foundation of everything, and we have to look at, and to understand the Constitution, we have to look at what the terms were and what those terms meant to our founding fathers, and then find the correlation to what we have today. Where the whole issue is because we aren't taking the time to find those commonalities or to really understand the terminology of the Constitution and understand what it truly means is where the issue is. You know, yes, the constitutional argument of it's my Second Amendment right, yes, we have that right. It's an inalienable right, which means it cannot be taken away. However, we have already put limitations and exceptions on that. Should it be used as a valid argument? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I'm not a judge. I'm not a jury. I am a human being. But the whole issue is we have so many other issues going on where hate, violence, distractions, discontent, trying to pull one another apart. You have to dislike this person over here because they have blonde hair where you have brown hair. We need to get rid of all that, go back down to the basics, and live a human life and learn to respect one another as human beings with feelings, choices, and behaviors that they are responsible for. I am not responsible for Debbie Lynn. I am not responsible for Janine, Egberto, or Mark. I am responsible for myself. If they are doing something that I feel is incorrect, yeah, I can point that out to them, but it's their choice to fix the problem. Or maybe it's my problem because what they are doing is actually correct and I misunderstand where they're coming from.
I really want to humbly say something because it is, I want to try to make my words correct in the way to say this. And it goes back to the Constitution again, and it goes back to a word that I like to use a lot as well called empathy. And what I mean by that, and this is very important, and one of the reasons I think we usually have a lack of understanding and people talking past each other and people not listening to each other, and it goes with this constitutional thing. The Constitution has an elastic clause. And the reason the Constitution has the elastic clause, that clause that allows it to be amended, is because by design it is understood that it was not a perfect document and that it was not an infallible document. And I think that is important in all our discussions that we have because, again, if you look at, and I can never pronounce your name right, but using myself again as a black person in this conversation, speaking and stating that I didn't have much faith in this document because it was a flawed document for me. If I was aggrieved by a document and later that document had to be corrected to remove my aggrievement, then by definition, it was a flawed document. It's not, that is not putting bad onus on America. America is, we are, as flawed beings, we are still great. As we can still be great as flawed beings, but a part of being great also is being able to accept that we are flawed, that we're not all perfect, and also be able to accept the reality of who we are, what we've done, and how we've atoned for what we've done. And I think in today's world where we have that ability, all of us now, whereas there were only some who were afforded speech, in as much as we always had a First Amendment, we are now all afforded speech. I can have a huge mouthpiece with a blog. Mark can have a huge mouthpiece with a blog. Debbie Lynn can have a huge outflow with all these other entities that she works with. All of us now have that expression where we don't have to be insular anymore. And I think it's important for, in that dialogue that we have, for us to look at things through the eyes of others. Because one of the problems that I see with a lot of the issues that we have today is folks wanting to hold on to a reality that never was. And in holding on to a reality and in defending a reality that never was, it forces you not to look through the eyes of others. It forces you to say, well, I have to maintain this status quo, so what are all the steps I have to go through to make the reality that I thought was still is? I think that's important. And until we can find a way to get across that argument, until we can find a way that that is really the argument, we will continue to speak past each other because we're looking at two different issues. One is trying to maintain the status quo, and the other one is trying to be more expansive. Henceforth, conservatism, progressivism.
I love that, Egberto. Yeah, I always frame this about trying to create the world we want to live in, and that's my attempt at bridging what you're talking about, Egberto. I want to just do a time check for us because we have two more rounds of questions, and these are kind of like the reflection piece and then deciding if we want to have it take any next steps or not. So I'm going to kind of marshal us into round four. What are we learning here? And this is another one of those, answer one or more of the following questions. So in one sentence, share what was most meaningful, valuable to you in the experience of this living room conversation. What learning, new understanding, or common ground was found on this topic? And has this conversation changed your perception of anyone in this group, including yourself? I think that the common ground that I really heard was that nobody here is advocating for takeaway guns. So I think that was actually somewhat surprising to me. But I did hear a lot of compassion and common ground for just common sense with guns, and the acknowledgement that we need to have more responsibility, and there are people who will not be responsible, but where this conversation could continue to see if there's more common ground. Meaningful and valuable to me in this experience, I feel a lot better informed about the importance of gun safety and also understanding that there's probably a big lack of it out there in our culture, not being a gun owner. I don't really know that, but I feel like that's something that I didn't really take into account before. And I'm going to pause there and go on to you, Egberto.
What I got out of this is being able to hear how other people feel about the gun issue and other issues. My expectation in a call like your living room conversations really isn't for somebody to listen to what anybody else says and say, oh, I've seen the light. What I'm hoping for is in being a part of discussions like this, is that you know how you get in the back of your head, something that somebody told you is still there. It may be dormant. And when enough corroborating information comes into your sphere, it suddenly starts to make sense. Because you can't go against culture, how you were cultured your entire life. I mean, that is one of the reasons now, and I try personally to not to judge, but not to hold against people steadfast in their belief, as long as in venues like this, people are actually listening. And I think that's what makes a venue like this important. Each of us talk, we say our piece. Hopefully, folks listen, not necessarily change. I listen to what everybody else has to say and try to make it a part of my body of knowledge as well, and then later on massage it, given that it wasn't given in sound bites or in some explosive manner, saying that, you know, name calling or anything like that, but we actually got a chance to hear people's point of view.
Thanks, Egberto. Janine?
One of the surprises for me in this conversation is just that I'd never verbalized sort of my history, my relationship with weapons, and so it actually helps sort of bring to bear my perspective, or at least the roots of my perspective, and that was really helpful. And in our conversation about the Constitution, however brief, it also brought to bear, it reminded me of a few things and connected some dots. For example, you know, the Constitution changes because terms of the Constitution become unacceptable to American society. So when it was no longer acceptable to own slaves, the Constitution changed. And when it was unacceptable for black men to not be able to vote, the Constitution changed. And much later, when it became unacceptable for women to not be able to vote, the Constitution changed. And so I think that sometimes we even forget that the Second Amendment was indeed an amendment. It was pretty quick, but it was not in the original Constitution. And so that we should honor our ability as a society to look critically at our own, the heart of our governance, which is from we the people. And the danger that we've alluded to here is there is some distrust for the people we've elected to do that for us, and there's some distrust of the media that has an influence in who those elected are. So that's a whole other living room conversation. So the question becomes more refined for me is that in terms of weapons of violence, is there a threshold of unacceptable consequence or unacceptable collateral duty that would cause us to review the Constitution, the Second Amendment, or any other amendment? You know, it could even be an amendment about states' rights, for example, that could come from this greater conversation of the world in which we live, where the symptomology that we so many have pointed to of gun violence could be addressed. So that's a huge, those things are huge clarifications for me, and thank you.
Thanks, Janine. Loki, how about you?
During this conversation that we've had, I've met some new people, got some new thoughts, and things to discover for myself, whether they apply to me or not. But the common ground that we did find here today is not necessarily, is the gun the problem? The gun isn't necessarily the problem. It's how we deal as human beings with that. There is a lot of gray areas, like Debbie Lynn said earlier. It's a gray area. There is too many other factors that we have to take a look at to understand. And you also have the differing opinions of the demographics or how you were raised, whether it was in a rural setting, whether it was in a city setting, and how things are handled. Are we going to be able to solve these issues overnight? No. But what does need to be resolved is the fact that we need to get back down to the basics and learn how to communicate with one another once again. And communication goes farther than just talking. In my personal opinion, there's a difference between talking and communication. Talking, you're just spewing your own points, not allowing the other person in. Communication revolves not only getting your point across, but also the willingness to actually listen to what's coming back at you without shutting it down until you know for 100% that it does not apply or it does apply. You know, what is the next step in this conversation? The biggest issue, and I say it on a lot of the shows that I do, and Janine probably doesn't like it when I say it on her show, is we just need to get back down to the basics and ask a lot of questions. Always ask questions, because that's where you're going to get the most honest information and answers. Mainstream media, we all know that they've already taken it to court and won lawsuits that says, yeah, we can lie to you and there's nothing you can do about it. So where do you find the truth? And the truth is within all of us, and we have to be the ones to go out and be the journalists and everything else to find out the true information.
Thanks, Loki. Mark?
Yeah, very, very similar to the very well-stated comments of everyone before. I think there's a lot of common ground, and what we're all seeing as the areas that need to be addressed, and that guns are just one part of a bigger issue that's very interconnected with many things. However, I will say that one of the things that was valuable for me was recognizing that each and every one of us came to this conversation with a different background, a different sense of purpose, yet we had a very similar kind of sense that our culture, our country can do better, that we have we have a problem, and the problem is violence and the use of guns and other things as, you know, acting against other humans, and that we need to take some steps to look at the reasons for this and to fix them. And I think we all acknowledge that that guns and are just a symptom of an underlying problem of fear and other things that are going on. And I heard that in so many of the comments. So it was reaffirming for me to know that although we came at it with our different perspectives and backgrounds, we all had sort of the same sense of there's a big issue here that somehow or another we got to get our minds around and get some fruitful dialogue and action going on. I also had a benefit for me in terms of any of these conversations. I get new, listening to other people, I get new ideas and thoughts, sort of like ahas, little ahas that occurred to me. And one that occurred, I'll just share it briefly, is this whole dialogue around the Constitution. And that there are, I've talked to a lot of people about the Constitution, and I love the Constitution. I'm not a student like Janine maybe is, carrying one around with me all the time, but I think it's a valuable and inspired document that's open for both interpretation and for change over time. But there are people who come to the document with their own mindsets. It's sort of like people who come to, you know, the Christian faith, for a comparison for a moment. They come to the Bible with a different mindset, or either it's a very strict interpretation, you know, at one end, or it's a very open document at the other end. And I think there's the same kind of thing, that there's a very there are people who approach life from a traditional standpoint that like things in black and white, and the Constitution and its black and whiteness, we've got to acknowledge that part of the people who are discussing and are fearful and have to come to the table in the dialogue around guns have this traditional mindset that want to lock on the words of the Constitution as part of their discussion. So even though I said it's a distraction, in my mind I'm also now seeing there's some value that some people need to have that conversation as part of this overall issue. I think we can get mired in it, but I think it's valuable for those individuals who need to have that. Whereas many people who see it as an open-ended document and interpret the change and growth as culture changes, that's just a different way in which we approach things, and we need to honor the different mindsets of people, whether they come from a traditional or a more modernistic or postmodern perspective. You know, what is my perception of anyone in the group? It was interesting to hear everybody's perceptions and ideas, and I thought it was a great conversation, and I thought we had a lot of great common ground, and enjoyed the time we've had together.
Thanks, Mark. Last round, we've kind of started on this one again already. I think I'll lump them together next time, but is there one important thing that you thought was accomplished here, and is there a next step you would like to take based on upon the conversation that we've just had? And I think the one important thing that's kind of sitting with me right now as I talk about my work with our greater social contract is that our American social contract is actually based on our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and all the various amendments, and as well as the Declaration of Independence. And so my next step is going to be to go back, and I've read the documents, but it's been a while, so I'm going to like review them a little bit more and see how they apply to my longer-term work. So that's my next step. Egberto?
My next step is to wait for this to come out and be processed so that I can actually put it out there, because I thought it was a healthy discussion coming from several different angles that people would can have a cup of coffee and sit down and listen to a wonderful podcast.
Love the promotion. Thanks, Egberto. Janine?
The round five rules say, what did we accomplish, and two, what's the next step? So I shouldn't be surprised given who's here, but I just need to point out that nobody called anybody a name, even though we don't agree about everything. And how lovely is that? And then that's just for the record. And then in terms of the next step, I mean, this is a group of coffee party radio show hosts. And so I, like the others here, who have, frankly, in the past and will again, we're going to continue this conversation with our listeners. And so I agree with you, Egberto. I actually wish this would broadcast before my show tomorrow, because I think it would be a great primer or opening salvo for the conversation that we want to have. I think it's a great opening salvo for many conversations about topics that face
American society today. So my next step is to carry this conversation out into the greater world. Thank you.
Thanks, Janine Loki.
What is the next step? To go out and share what I've learned today through this conversation, to ask people questions, to see if we can somehow get back to an area that issues like this can be resolved. Will they be resolved in my lifetime? I don't know. Hopefully, yes. But I've also got to always remind myself, as the next step, is to not get so wound up in my own personal mucky muck or problems or whatever else, but remain open with the body language, with the way I talk to people, that I invoke them or cause them to want to have meaningful conversations like we're having right now. That's the next step, because when we as a collective or as individuals can wake somebody else and open their eyes to a new point of view, we are furthering the education of future generations that are going to be facing similar situations in concept to what we are with this conversation, and how they're going to be able to resolve them the same way. And violence and fear and hate are not the answers. The answer is intelligent conversation that's open-ended so that everybody can be a part.
Thanks, Loki. Mark?
Yeah, very similar to everyone else. I think there is, the next steps for me are two-pronged, and I think it harkens back to something Loki said earlier about the fact that we approach everything from what can I learn and grow through this, and then how can I use that outwardly. And so there's an internal piece for me where I'm going to take the conversation and absorb it into my package of beliefs about what I see in terms of the violence in America and the planet, and the voice of how we can be reasonable in terms of moving forward and solving those issues. So there's an internal piece, and then there's that external piece. Yes, I too will market this to my network of folks, and will also see how my future programs, blogs, and other things that I do will take the information that I've learned here and take it out to the planet and affect those little pockets of consciousness that I was talking about, either through the modeling of a new level of behavior or through teaching. And so thank you for the opportunity to participate today, Debbie Lynn.
Thanks, Mark, and thank you, everybody, for participating today. I do want to just do a quick reminder. We have a feedback form that is both online and attached to the printed materials if you happen to print them out, and we love getting those back. It should take somewhere between 30 seconds to 2 minutes to fill out, depending on how fast you read. It's all check marks, so we'd love to get those feedback forms. It really helps us grow and improve. And with that, we'll close out this living room conversation that we're doing virtually. And I hope everybody has enjoyed the show, the living room conversation. And if you want to check them out for yourself, go to livingroomconversations.org. And under topics, we have a whole host of different topics that you can have this conversation on. And the guns and responsibility conversation is listed under constitutional matters.
Thank you for listening. This has been Living Room Conversations, courtesy of Coffee Party USA Radio. You can learn more at coffeepartyusa.com, and make sure to click on that big red button that says Become a Member. Coffee Party USA is 100% volunteer and member supported. That's you. So thanks for listening. Make it a great day.
For 50 years, Kawasaki has been defying convention and building masterpieces that have revolutionized motorsports. Come celebrate Kawasaki's breakthrough products like the jet ski watercraft, ninja motorcycles, and mule side-by-sides at the Golden Anniversary Sales Event from April 1st through June 30th. Great financing is available, plus sales incentives on select models at participating dealers. Visit Freedom Power Sports Canton before June 30th to take advantage of these great offers. For 50 years, Kawasaki has been defying convention and building masterpieces that have revolutionized motorsports. Come celebrate Kawasaki's breakthrough products like the jet ski watercraft, ninja motorcycles, and mule side-by-sides at the Golden Anniversary Sales Event from April 1st through June 30th. Great financing is available, plus sales incentives on select models at participating dealers. Visit Freedom Power Sports McDonough before June 30th to take advantage of these great offers.